Welcome back to Highly Successful Couples, the show that helps couples grow together instead of growing apart. I'm your host, Nick Solacek, and today we are going to continue our conversation on the importance of repair. So if you didn't listen to last week's episode, that is part one, and this is a continuation of that conversation. There is some important context, wisdom about the opposites attract dynamic, a phenomenon called emotional symbiosis, some of the key points or pillars of connection that we reviewed. So go back and listen to that episode if you haven't already. Today, we're going to continue this conversation to fill in the gaps a little bit and answer this question about repair, which is one of the most important skill sets in relationship. A lot of experts believe that the ability to repair is fundamental to making our relationships work. And couples that break up, couples that get divorced, couples that can't make the relationship last has a lot to do with their inability to repair conflict and make sense of some of the things that go on. Obviously, not every relationship is meant to last the test of time, to be forever. Some relationships come in for a short period of time to teach us something, to maybe help us better understand what it is that we need in relationship and to seek that and ask for that and look for that at the outset. Instead of experiencing lack of the things that we want or need. In my experience, most couples have a lot of growth opportunities. So the reason I'm mentioning that is a lot of couples will break up before doing more investigation or seeking counsel or better understanding what actually makes relationships work and what are some of the common perils and pitfalls. In addition to this thing called repair, a relationship vision is also of critical importance. We're going to touch on that a little bit today, but I'll dive into that concept in a future episode. So to recap, we talked about three cycles of relationship. We talked about connection, disconnection, and repair, and that healthy relationships, thriving relationships will flow through these stages. Relationships that don't feel so good, relationships that maybe aren't working are often stuck in a disconnection phase and never fully repair things that happen. So hurtful dynamics might get swept under the rug. Things can get ignored. Dynamics can be just not addressed. And bad behavior continues. Behavior that, you know, creates anxiety for one partner. They might abandon themselves in the relationship just to make it work. That's this common trade that we make, attachment over authenticity. And what we're trying to do here is be more authentic, be more connected to what it is that we need, to ask for those things in a positive context and for two people to develop a grounded, empowered relationship with one another. And in order to do that, we need to understand that these cycles exist and we need to spend less time in disconnection. We want to decrease the amount of hours, months, years that we can spend in disconnection. So this connection piece is when it feels good. We're relaxed, we're okay, everything's calm and secure. And disconnection is when we get that misunderstanding, not feeling good, feeling unsafe. There's this just misattunement. We really don't get each other, or you don't get me. And that sense of feeling gotten is paramount to success in relationship. There's a key principle here, which is that conflict is a growth opportunity. And there's a kind of a cliche now in the personal development space around growth opportunity, specifically in couples therapy, that, you know, every therapist just tells the couple, no matter what problem they bring in, this is a growth opportunity for you. You know, you just got to work on this. And there's something to learn here. And that's true for most things. For some of us, the growth opportunity might actually be to leave our relationship. The growth opportunity might be to no longer put up with abusive or toxic dynamics after trying everything we can to make it work, after seeking support, after going to therapy, after looking for insights, and our partner is just stuck, stagnant for years, not making any changes. Some of us, to grow and to get our needs met, we do need to find someone else. But I'm more optimistic than that. And I think that many of us actually need to dig in together and to get a third perspective, get a third party in the room to give us some insight about what we can expect about relationships, what's normal, what we need to avoid, what some of the, you know, dangerous territory is that we should probably stay out of. And I don't mean avoid conversations. I mean, avoiding certain behaviors, treating each other with kindness and respect instead of put downs and negativity and criticism and shame. So this growth opportunity conflict is pointing to this reality that we're drawn to a partner who's different than us. We're attracted to them because they are not like us. If they were just like us, it'd be a little bit boring. Part of the sexual tension, part of the polarity is in that opposites attract dynamic. And in part one of this series, I discussed one person can be more emotional, one person can be more logical. We've got these unique strengths, skill sets, abilities, maybe even, you know, the way that we take care of ourselves, take care of our body can be different from our partner, or the way that we manage our money, the way that we communicate, the way that we handle boundaries. There's many paradoxes and opposites inside of a relationship that we're going to continue to explore. But what I want you to keep in mind is conflict is a growth opportunity. So when you got issues that come up in your relationship, it makes sense you're frustrated. It makes sense you're angry. It makes sense you do not want certain things to happen. You don't want to be treated in certain ways. But I'd ask you and encourage you to get curious about what is the growth opportunity here from me? And if both people ask themselves that question, there is a powerful realization that can come from that. And it does take two. You know, we got to do this work together. We can work on things on our own. We can gain insights. We can read a great book, go to therapy, listen to a great podcast. And at some point, our partner, in order to make things work, in order to grow, in order to become allies, our partner's going to have to join us in that conversation. And that can be tricky because in every relationship, even with me and my partner, one of us can be resistant, you know, to growth or having a difficult conversation or going to therapy. And some of the reasons that come up for us could be things like, oh, money. You know, we don't want to spend the money. We're stretched. You know, we got these other things we want to put cash into. Or I just don't want to. Do we have to? You know, oh God, do we have to have another conversation? Do we need to get support? And we're wrestling with our own shame about the fact that we struggle. And we can be deep inside of our fear that we're not enough in some way. And because our relationship doesn't work and our partner's telling us we need support, that maybe that means something negative about us instead of it just being a normal human experience. So inside of all of this are growth opportunities, you know, to reclaim parts of us that were lost along the way. So the conflict that we experience is not happening to ruin our lives or for us to relive some nightmare that we might have experienced in a previous relationship. There's something inside of these challenges for us to learn. And if we turn towards these challenges as a team, we can break through old dynamics and we can begin using our energy in a positive way instead of all of our energy being fixated on negative dynamics, things that don't work, offensive, defensive strategies. And this is really a big opportunity for all couples. If we're in the work, if our partner and ourselves say, yeah, I'm down for this conscious relationship thing. I'm willing to do the work. I'm willing to face my shadows. I'm willing to take ownership of my deficits, acknowledge my insecurities, be vulnerable with you, and hang in there and listen when it's important, and create these moments of connection together, practice this thing called repair. All of that can come together in a really beautiful way to make progress, which is what makes life and our relationships meaningful, satisfying, is that we feel like, okay, even if it's slow, hey, we're making progress together and we're in this thing as a team. A key piece here, and this is connected to part one where I talked about how do we become disconnected and that one of the ways is that we become self-absorbed. Well, restoring empathy, the ability to sense what someone else is experiencing. When couples can increase empathy, they can start to make progress and get connected to what's really going on, get connected to the reality of who their partner is, you know, because we're always so focused on ourselves, our own outcomes and preventing our own fears from coming true. This is just a big deal. And it's one of the main things a couple struggle with is that they just actually have lost this sense of what it's like to be their partner and what's important to them. And we've really become entrenched in this pattern of self-absorption. We don't have frequent moments of connection. We're deeper inside of that disconnection struggle, which could also be like a power struggle phase or a dead zone phase. So in order to do this, in order to create more empathy, there are a couple key things that can be helpful. And the first is this key takeaway question that I mentioned in part one, which is understanding what your partner wanted and needed the most as a child. What do they want and need, but not get? This is almost always true. There's almost always an answer to this. If you feel like you don't have one, maybe you just don't know what that is yet. You haven't spent enough time exploring that or being curious about it. It's important that we know the answer for ourselves and that we understand that thing for our partner, because it's one of the major keys to transforming our relationship dynamic. So we need to learn more about our childhood experience, get more curious about that so we can share it with our partner, and vice versa. And if we can get clear about what they need from us, we can bring that into these moments of disconnection, to come back to connection, to repair something that was said or not said, done or not done. It's not always things that we actively do or say that can create hurt. It can be our lack of presence, our absent-mindedness, all the energy we put into another direction that might create anxiety for our partner. We need to get clear about all this. You know, what's really impacting and affecting this space between us and our partner. So if we maintain an awareness that our love relationship has a hidden purpose to repair childhood emotional wounds, we start playing a new game, which is to actually actively heal and create this thing called corrective emotional experiences with each other. This is one of the key features. It's one of the main characteristics of a conscious relationship. And the couples and the individuals that listen to this show, I think that we're all on the same journey. You know, we want to continue to create that with our partner. Maybe we want to get started and take the first step, or we want to bring this alive with our next partner, with the next person that we fall in love with. So it's a key thing to remember and maintain awareness of, especially inside of conflict, because this is part of the hidden force that drives these moments of misunderstanding, disconnection, upset, and so on. We need a new paradigm here. And that's what repair requires, really, you know, deep, sincere repair. And there are many ways to apologize or take responsibility for our behavior, but we definitely need a new philosophy and a new approach. So techniques can help. There are many different techniques out there, communication modalities. I teach one called a Mago dialogue. We also need just perspective on the situation. And we need to remember this wisdom of opposites attract that is fundamental to part of this understanding. And again, you know, talk about that in part one of this series. So if we can do all that, remember the deeper purpose of our relationship, we start to take new steps. We start to take new actions. We start to ask different questions. Get more curious about what's driving these moments of conflict and frustration. And this is a major key. You're never fighting about what you think you're fighting about. There's always something from the past driving your reactivity now. The psyche is timeless. And repairing fully with your partner includes understanding how you got disconnected in the first place and taking responsibility for the unconscious automatic strategies that you use to protect yourself. And we all have strategies, the maximizing, the minimizing, the defensive or offensive, the avoidant or anxious strategies that we might use to keep ourselves at a safe distance or keep ourselves in proximity or close enough that, you know, we feel safe there. And everyone has a different register of that, like a different sense of what's okay. Some people feel smothered when their partner gets too close. There's fears that come up there. And some people feel abandoned when their partner gets too distant and they're not as connected. And again, you know, another opposites attract kind of dynamic. We can really talk forever about the paradox of avoidant anxious. And I want to share some practical tips here about creating repair. I want to share some sentence stems and approaches that you might use to reconnect with your partner, to really come back together in these moments of disagreement so you can shorten that time of disconnection. That's really an important goal here, is let's spend less time disconnected, more time connected, and repair is the gateway for that. One thing that makes a big difference here is defining and understanding safety. So if you've listened to some of my podcast interviews with other people, I've talked a lot about this, and I think of this as five main pillars. We probably could come up with more, but these are five that I feel that are really important. And the first is integrity, which means actions matching words, that I am who I say I am. I avoid committing to things if I'm not sure that I can follow through on it. So I only make plans with my partner or my friends or people in my life or with myself if I can do it. Now, you know, when it comes to ourselves, we say we're going to save money. We say we're going to go to the gym, that we're going to grow the business, that we're going to have that tough conversation. And, you know, sometimes we don't do that. We don't follow through. So there's, you know, the relationship to self piece, being in integrity with oneself, and then also with your partner and with other people in your life. This is a really big deal. And it's one of the main pillars here for creating safety. The second is attunement. And in part one, I talked about this idea of being gotten, that, wow, you know, I really get you and you get me. And wow, we really understand each other. You know, we feel like we're on the same page and we might not agree about everything, but we really understand. So it's like understanding over agreement. Big deal. And big part of creating safety. The third is truthfulness. So, you know, we avoid lying, omitting information, withholding. We really want to create sincerity, truth telling, honesty. So we're not, you know, in a relationship that's allowing betrayal, deceit, these kind of things to go on. And we both sincerely, you know, aspire to bring these qualities alive. Sometimes telling the truth is hard. You know, your partner says, hey, does this make me look fat? It's kind of a trap of a question. You know, how are you supposed to answer it? And no one wants to make their partner feel bad, even if they have a judgment in their mind that they, you know, maybe the outfit doesn't make them look flattering. But there are things that sometimes our partner will ask us from a place of insecurity. And it sets both people up for failure a little bit when we do that. Just like if we initiate sex with our partner from a place of insecurity, it's not the same as like an authentic desire or from a place of arousal. It's actually coming from somewhere else. And in a way, that's not totally truthful. And we're sensitive to that and we can pick up on that. So truthfulness is not about exposing every single thought that you have, everything that runs through your mind. It's really making an effort to be sincere with your partner, not withhold information that you feel could change things for them, that could change the game for them. Like if I know information, I've done something, I've said something, I'm involved with something that I know my partner would not like, that they would be upset about, and I don't tell them, you know? That's not truthful. I'm concealing information from them to prevent certain consequences. And there's a lot of people that do this, that they withhold information that if disclosed would change everything for their partner. And, you know, affairs are one of the most extreme and painful versions of that. So telling the truth matters. If you're out with your friends and you have an ice cream cone, and you know, you feel like your partner maybe has some energy on that, that you eat too much ice cream. you know, I'm not going to tell you what to do about it, but just consider that that's kind of the same thing. And there is something there about being yourself and being able to make your own choices and being accepted for that. And if you have a health concern or a health issue and it causes anxiety for your partner, maybe something to talk about, maybe something to work on. Maybe there's a growth opportunity for you to take better care of yourself so that you can create a more safe dynamic with you and your partner. We do sometimes make choices that actually activate our partner, that trigger them. And we can get curious about, you know what, if I didn't do that, or I made a different choice, if I was more truthful here, what could we create together? How could I reduce my level of fear? How could I reduce my partner's level of anxiety? And sometimes we make compromises. We make agreements with each other about what the right way to handle things are. Too often, our own projection of our fear, our anxiety, is put onto our partner. So if we're worried about something, we have this quiet little anxiety, we can put it onto them and say that, you know, this is your thing and this is about you. And we don't even notice how that happens. We don't even see that in motion, that we project our stuff onto them. And there's something that's not truthful about that as well. So it's an important concept, a lot of different ways that truthfulness can show up. And my main point here is just to avoid omitting information that you know your partner would be upset about. Don't do things, don't make choices that you know, if your partner finds out about it, that they're going to be upset, because that's where you start navigating territory that is untruthful and affecting not only your partner's sense of safety, but your own. Under this umbrella of safety is also the ability to repair. And that's what this whole episode, this whole series is about. And we're going to get into more some more tactical stuff here in a moment about how to do that or how you might approach it. The last piece on safety is about consistency and reliability. So I show up in a relatively consistent fashion. My partner can count on me to a high degree. I'm a reliable person for them. So if we have Jekyll and Hyde dynamics, hot, cold, massive, you know, swings consistently every day, that's heading in the wrong direction. Between men and women, there's definitely hormonal differences and changes and fluctuations. But can we, to a high degree, this isn't about perfection, it's about to a high degree, be consistent and to stay in communication with each other, let each other know how we're feeling. Like, oh man, you know what? I'm totally exhausted today and I just can't do this. Staying in communication, you could be consistent that way. Obviously, if you never follow through on things and you never keep your agreements, then you got an integrity problem. So five pillars here for safety: integrity, attunement, truthfulness, the ability to repair, and consistency and reliability. The reason these are important is because a lot of people think that safety is that, okay, well, I have food and water and shelter, and that's enough. Those are basic physiological needs. And in order for our relationships to feel connective, positive, alive, we need these qualities as well. And aliveness is actually also another important thing. A lot of us know how to exist, but we don't really know how to live and be truly and fully alive. So we'll talk more about that in future episodes. This thing around repair requires a little bit of context. And I want you to think about, you know, how many times have you said sorry and had it not received or rejected? Have you ever, you know, refused someone else's apology? There are some things that happen to us that, wow, really hard to find forgiveness and acceptance. If we're in a relationship, then this is really a lot more important than, you know, thinking about your past relationships where you couldn't forgive someone. What we want to do here is just understand that there is some hesitancy around saying sorry, because if we're vulnerable in that way and we take ownership and it's rejected, ooh, kind of painful. Like, if our apology is met with someone doubling down with "I told you so," or more shaming, blaming, and criticism, it really doesn't help. And this doesn't really reinforce that taking ownership is a safe thing to do, and that your partner is going to be able to hold you with compassion and presence in that moment. So we need to build trust with each other And when we take responsibility for our inner world and our past, we build trust with our partner. It's a big deal. And we begin to learn that our partner is willing to take ownership for what is theirs instead of unfairly placing the blame or dismissing issues. And we all come up against these moments where we really struggle to take responsibility for what is ours. We might say, you know, this is all you, this is your stuff. And we're disconnected from the reality that our relationships are a co-creation. It takes two to tango. We're both in this dance. It's very difficult to have a meaningful dance in a ballroom all by yourself. Don't want to make the dancers here feel dismissed with that statement. But the point is we all have a longing and yearning to be with a partner, to do this thing, this romantic dance with someone else. And we both need to take responsibility for the fact that if things aren't working, we both did this. You know, it takes two people to make a relationship great and two people to ruin it. Some behaviors that build trust. One of them is just listening non-defensively, making eye contact, turning towards your partner, and just being open to what they have to say. We want to avoid lengthy monologues that go for hours and hours. So, you know, if we're going to listen non-defensively, it'd be helpful if our partner gave us bite-sized chunks of information instead of a lecture. But no matter where you're at, this can be a helpful part of the process. You know, even if you got to hang in there with your partner for 30 minutes to hear them out. And just try to avoid taking things personally. Be curious, ask questions, and seek understanding before seeking agreement. Our partner doesn't have to believe and agree with everything that we think, say, do. We are different, and so we need some space for that. And as well, building trust can be avoiding getting overly reactive, which is not just getting loud. You know, reactivity can be exploding or imploding. It can be raising the volume of our voice, or it can be shutting down. Both of these things are reactive, but often the quiet partner or the one who implodes or goes inside judges their partner who's getting loud as being reactive. And the more the one person gets loud, the more the other person gets quiet. The more that one person gets quiet, the more the other person gets loud. We just kind of tend to double down on our strategies when we're under stress. There are some sentence stems as well that can help these conversations. And a sentence stem is basically an incomplete sentence, and it's designed to specifically guide you in a particular direction. So an example would be, something I want to talk to you about is, and then you fill in the blank. Something I appreciate about you is. These are examples of sentence stems. But for repair, instead of just saying, okay, I'm sorry, I apologize, you know, we want to do it with some sincerity and some depth. And in order to deepen that repair, these are a couple things that you could try. Here are some directions you could go in, which is to say, you didn't deserve that from me because. This helps reflect that you understand your partner's worth, and you understand that, you know what, when I think about it, I think, you know, you deserve this and you're a good person and I wish I could have done this differently, which is another sentiment, you know, how I wish I could have done this differently is. And letting your partner know that you get that and that you actually, upon reflection, see a different pathway, another way to handle the situation and do it differently, maybe with more grace, more patience, more kindness. To deepen this further, you know, when I think about this, what was triggered in me from childhood was. Another way of saying that is, you know, I think this situation reminds me of when I was a kid, and fill in the blank. That's an important one because of all the historical context we've discussed, that our communication styles, our protective strategies, all of these things are grown and learned and developed through childhood, through our infancy, childhood, and adolescence. and we play them out now as adults, not really fully understanding that there might be another way, a more empowered or grounded or connected way to deal with these situations that come up. Another variation here of a sentence stem for repair is, what you really deserve from me is, and stating positively what you feel like your partner deserves. Again, reflecting their worth, painting a picture of the loving gesture, you know, that they deserve from you. These repair stems are helpful, and we also need positive behavior change. If we keep making the same mistakes over and over again, that starts to erode trust. That doesn't build it. So there's something that's off if you're experiencing that dynamic. If we keep repeating the same mistakes, we keep hurting our partner over and over again with the same thing, the safety goes down, the trust goes down, and the end of the relationship is not far away. Some basic expectations here for repair. Look, from time to time, there are going to be moments of misattunement and disconnection. We're not going to get each other. We're going to be focused on our own priorities. We might ignore our partner. And, you know, sometimes I'll be on my phone playing chess. My partner will walk in the room and talk to me, and I'm so focused on the game that I miss what she says. Or I just utter a basic statement of acknowledgement, like, okay, sounds good, but I'm not really there with her. And that moment is frustrating for her. It's frustrating for me, but we both co-create it. We understand these moments are going to happen, and we talk about this stuff, and we create agreements to try to avoid these things happening over and over and over again. So we know, and I like all couples to know, that, hey, from time to time, your feelings might get hurt. You're going to get triggered. No one is perfect. We're a traumatized species, and we've got a lot to learn. So all this is normal and to be expected. We're going to have power struggle dynamics. We're going to see things different ways. We're going to misremember, forget, etc. And there's no relationship that is 100% perfect all the time. We talked about that in episode 3 with the myth of the perfect partner. There's going to be moments where we get disconnected and we get tripped up. We're going to hit speed bumps and little obstacles along the way. And then we're going to need to repair and reconnect. This is really hard to do because when you're in those spaces of disconnection, you don't feel good. You feel anxious. You feel hopeless. Your mind starts generating thoughts from that place of embodiment. So what you're feeling starts to loop with your thoughts, and that you just get in a feedback loop with that. So in order to break out of that cycle, we need to remember that there's another way here. That, hey, let me try this repair game. Let me develop this ability further, because I wonder if that's the thing that's in my way, is that me and my partner don't really know how to repair effectively with one another. And we need to learn a new skill. So this ability to repair, it means that we're able and willing to participate in repair attempts. We're willing to give it a sincere apology. We're willing to receive it from our partner. We understand that conflict is a part of a healthy relationship and misunderstandings happen. When I say conflict is a part of a healthy relationship or conflict is a growth opportunity, a lot of people can take that to mean, you know, oh, so this toxic stuff that's going on is just growth for us. You know, we fight and yell all the time and, you know, this is supposed to be like some uplifting growth experience. And as I talked about in the first episode, sometimes the growth opportunity is for you guys to stop doing that together. It doesn't mean the relationship needs to end. It means the patterns need to end. And sometimes our growth opportunity is to leave the relationship. But we're often missing a lot of info, you know, about what's really going on. So underneath this concept or this culture that we're going to build around repair, you and your partner are allowed to make mistakes. You're allowed to get it wrong. You're allowed to forget. But you have a different intention. You have a bigger vision. You don't want that to happen. You agree that you want something else instead. And you prioritize repair and reconnection over less important activities like watching TV, scrolling Instagram, or playing video games. in some moments in time, you know, we do need to take a break from the conflict. We do need to take a walk. We do need to clear our head. And there's nothing wrong with that. Just stay in communication with your partner about what you need. You might say something like, hey, I'm feeling overwhelmed right now, and I feel like I really just need to go for a walk and clear my head because I want to repair this with you. And I just feel like I don't know how to do that right now. So can we talk in an hour? Can we talk tonight or tomorrow morning? And put it in the calendar, you know, make an agreement, make some space to have an important conversation and prioritize it over the less important things. Sometimes watching TV for an hour or two is actually really helpful for your mind and your system to orient to something else, to plug into another story. It becomes more of a problem when we just constantly exit the energy of the relationship through other means, which means we avoid having conversations. We never get around to it. And we're always too busy. It just never comes up. Oh yeah, you know, I've been meaning to talk about that. We need to prioritize this stuff and be more aware of when we've got that sentiment that something's unresolved or incomplete and talk about it with our partner. Sometimes it's helpful to process this stuff with a trusted friend or a coach or a therapist or counselor on your own so you can get more clear about what's really going on and how you can have the conversation with your partner. And depending on the intensity or the length of time that certain dynamics are going on, sometimes we do need that extra support. So we are allowed to make mistakes, but part of repairing properly includes committing to positive behavior change. And this is always part of this growth opportunity dynamic. A great therapist, a great workshop, a great book on relationships for couples, it really wouldn't be worth a dime if it didn't create positive changes for people and instill and emphasize the importance of this, that, okay, we can learn how to repair, we can understand relationship psychology and attachment patterns, but ultimately we need to make some progress here. How can we create the positive changes that we seek? And this can be difficult for people to do, to actually change their habits, to start to make new choices, to take that intentionality or that vision and actually apply it, to take action and get things done and move the needle in a meaningful way. And we've got to do it. And if you don't know how, you need support. So we talked about connection, disconnection, and repair, these three cycles. To recap, repair is, yes, willing to say, I'm sorry, willing to say, hey, okay, my bad. Take responsibility for what you did, what you said, or you didn't do, didn't say, you forgot to get flowers, you forgot the birthday card. Sharing historical context, you know, restoring empathy with each other, and committing to change. That's a big, big piece for this repair conversation. And couples love to experience not having the same negative moments over and over again. Couples love it. You know, it's like, oh, wow, thank God we don't deal with that anymore. Wow, we made progress. And okay, maybe we're on to the next challenge, we're on to the next growth opportunity, but man, it feels good not to have that cycling over and over again. One thing that I teach couples how to do is learn to dialogue with each other. And the creators of Imago Relationship Theory developed what's called a conceptual framework, a safe conversation framework, a repair process, and it's transformational in the way that it moves couples towards a sense of wholeness and aliveness and restoring empathy and getting connected to the reality of the situation, which requires us to do certain things like turn off the TV channel of our life, hang in there with our partner, make the moment all about them. And in exchange, can they do the same for us? Can they turn off their TV channel, tune into ours, and make a moment all about us? Give us a chance to talk about what's important. And it takes time to learn, takes time to practice and make this a part of your relationship. Learning to dialogue doesn't solve all challenges for couples. It doesn't magically make everything better, but it's foundational. It's fundamental to creating some of these bigger, deeper changes that people want. And once you learn how to do it and you really get it, not just from okay, we're going to go through the motions, but from an embodiment perspective, that starts to translate into your life. It starts to bleed out of the therapy room, into the bedroom, into the dinner table, into your conversations in the car, into your daily life. And that's the big promise of Imago Theory. That's the promise of couples working on things together, is that this is actually going to make a difference for us. So I highly encourage you to look that up. I teach couples how to do it. I train couples how to do it in session in my online course. You could pick up the book, Getting the Love You Want, which will help you better understand how this technique and framework works. And to get started, a lot of couples do need guidance. They need someone to help them keep the train on the tracks, rider on the horse, and keep the conversation going in a positive direction. This whole thing helps couples move from judgment that something is wrong, you know, something's wrong with my partner, into, oh, something's painful for my partner. This hurts my partner. It causes anxiety for them in a certain way. Oh, wow, they got this memory from childhood or this dynamic in their childhood that really almost perfectly matches this thing that we play out today. And I didn't know that. You know, I had no idea that that was going on. In general, judgment serves our defenses and curiosity serves connection. So the Imago Dialogue and all the conversations we're having here, I hope will help to serve that connection by being curious. And the dialogue also helps us shift from that judgment into empathy, into sensing more about what our partner's experiencing. What is it like to be them? Why does this matter? Why is this important? Let's like put all these key variables together. Let's connect the dots and better understand why this matters so much. So we go from a power struggle dynamic to a healing dynamic, to being allies in each other's healing and growth. If you want to work with me on this, just visit my website, nicksolacek.com. You guys know where to find me. Thanks for tuning into this episode on repair, fundamental to relationships. I hope this helps you with those moments that inevitably come up, those difficult, awkward conversations, those feelings of anxiety or frustration that come up when your partner doesn't show up for you in the way that you want them to. When they're doing something, saying something, being a certain way, they're just out of alignment. It doesn't totally fit the vision. How can we enroll each other in a positive vision that we agree upon, talk about the things that matter most, and make meaningful changes? Thanks for hanging in. Thanks for listening. I appreciate all your support in this show. We've ranked, actually, we're top 50 in Canada, top 20 in Singapore, top 40 in Australia for relationship podcasts. Appreciate you guys supporting the show, sharing this, and tuning in every week. It means a lot to me to be able to reach people with what I believe is a very important conversation. So thanks for being here. As many of you know, I created my show with the audience in mind, which means no ads or sponsors or wasting your time. So if you love this podcast, please leave a 5-star review, share it with a friend or someone that matters to you, post it on your social story. It helps support the show, which helps more people in creating relationships that they love. Thanks for tuning in and spending time with me. I look forward to seeing you next week.